Chapter 46. Edith. When Edith heard Chet was living in the San Jacinto Mountains, a mere 2.5 hours from home, and he still hadn't been to see her, well, instead of crawling into a hole with a super big gulp-sized Diet Coke, and also maybe one of Chick-fil-A's seasonal peach shakes, or instead of slowly wasting away from hunger and neglect, she redoubled her efforts at finding the true source of Eli's magic. And the deeper she dug, the more Edith realized the people she connected to Eli weren't connected to him at all, at least not genetically. Dusk was right. There were 4 children that Eli actually fathered. The rest were just friends. Grandpa Eli could have been an affectionate nickname, maybe, based on their common religious bond. An entire religion, and it seemed God had forgotten every last one of them. So what was it about these people? They'd all consumed the magic, but initially, why did they keep on consuming it? What could they have done to Eli that would make him want to curse them and their children for all time, if they were supposed to be his friends? After making a list of 40 people, originals, who claimed a connection to Grandpa Eli, Edith came to a dead end. 7 generations later, there could be tens of thousands cursed, which seemed about right, but she still couldn't fathom why. Edith returned to the journal, read that bit again about, especially that Hiram kid, he and Sophronia would have been the same age, and decided it was time to follow Hiram's family line. There were very few fractured lines in that family tree. No divorces or early deaths, no half this, step that. In a family of that size, it was almost unheard of. That alone intrigued Edith. She taped both pedigree charts to her wall, side by side. Anyone who didn't know her would think she was some sort of serial killer. It helped, though, to look at them. Especially when she discovered, though she hadn't yet filled in all the family names, that she knew one of these people, one of Hiram's kin. She hoped very much he was still alive. The oldest son of the oldest son of the oldest daughter was a man also named Hiram, and last she knew, he lived very near where Edith herself used to live in the bungalow on the Hamiltons' property. The man was Abby's grandpa. Edith went for a drive. She shouldn't have been eager to see the man again. Edith wasn't good at first impressions, that was a given, but she'd really bungled his. It was the summer before freshman year. The bungalow's air conditioner was being repaired and it was stifling hot in her upstairs loft. Once the sun dropped behind the hills, she took a blanket outside, spread it out on the grass, and lay down, letting the very slight wind wash over her, grateful for any bit of movement in the air. There was a party going on at the Hamiltons. They didn't always tell her mother for what, just how many to expect, and Edith hadn't seen Abby all week, when a shadow and a pardon me passed over her blanket. He apologized for intruding, which he hadn't been. They weren't her grounds. He babbled on about what a pretty sunset it was and how he thought he'd walk the grounds a while. It didn't occur to her right away that he only babbled to cover up that he'd been crying. Mrs. Hamilton could be a lot, but crying? If he was a rich investor, he certainly didn't look the part. And he didn't act the part either, apologizing for one, looking her in the eyes for another. Never happened with the Job 7. There was always this awkward glancing and turning away when someone was seeing her for the first time. This man didn't look away from her, not once, and she felt strangely peaceful in his presence, unscrutinized. "Here," the man said, "I swiped these from the kitchen. They were my wife's favorite." And he extended a handful of Jordan almonds, also Edith's favorite. "Please, take them all." When she wouldn't, he dumped them all on her blanket. Edith ended up directing him to her own favorite walking path that began just a stone's throw from the bungalow. When he thanked her, she sensed his gratitude. "Beautiful night. Enjoy the sunset." And this was where she really botched it. "And you enjoy the party." "Well," he said, "death comes to us all." She thought at the time what an odd send-off. Edith didn't know it was Abby's grandpa until the following week, same day she learned he was only there for his wife's funeral. Not a party, a burial. It took real guts showing her Job 7 face again after that kind of blunder, but Edith was so accustomed to embarrassment she'd get nothing done if she stopped for every bit of shame in her path. Hiram lived in a planned community for 50 and overs, a gated community. Edith gave them his name and hers before adding, "I'm an old friend of his granddaughter." She knew it wasn't going to fly. She was unexpected, pockmarked, exactly the type of deviant kept on the far side of the gate. Could she make a break for it? She really wanted to talk to this man, and the security guard looked to be a resident himself. In other words, old. She could outdrive his golf cart at any rate. But the gate swung up, and the guard ushered her forward, no questions asked. Hiram lived in a modest rambler. They were all more or less the same. All the trees were mature, and so were the residents. Based on the number of them outside that waved to her as she passed, Edith guessed that many of them gardened. Hiram certainly did. It was still only March, but he wore a wide-brimmed hat and watered his lawn the old-fashioned way, with a hose. Potted plumerias lined the path leading to his front door, along with dwarf palmettos and birds of paradise. It seemed like a strange sort of paradise as he, too, waved, beckoning her onto the driveway, despite that he learned of her presence there less than 2 minutes ago. He took not only her hand but her forearm as well, in a more intimate shake. She couldn't tell that he'd aged in the last 20-plus years. He had the same kind eyes. His stare did not waver. He said he remembered her, called her the bungalow girl. Inside, family photos freckled across two full walls. Edith loved old photos, and could have spent all day in that room. Tearing her eyes from the wall, she apologized for dropping in unannounced. "I couldn't find a number." "No one can," he said. "I prefer face-to-face conversations. It's a dying art." "You're probably right. Well," she shuffled nervously. She'd interviewed dozens of people in the past months, but standing in Hiram's living room made her back sweat. "You must be wondering why I'm here." Hiram sat and indicated she should do the same. "I never wonder. I'm a very handsome man." At Edith's instinctive stiffening, he grinned. "I may be wondering just a little." "Oh," Edith smiled back. "I'm on a job looking for information about Hiram Waters from the early 1800s. I don't suppose you know anything about your great-great-grandpa." "I don't suppose I do." "Oh," that was disappointing. "Were you named after him?" "So I've been told," he said. "Can I offer you something to drink?" "Oh no, I won't be long." He nodded sweetly and wandered off to, Edith had to assume, the kitchen based on the racket of banging pots and slamming drawers. She stood, drawn toward one wall of photos, and spent her time looking. Abby was there, in a candid shot where she smiled. Less comfortable in the stiff, posed family photos, it was the only picture in which she smiled. It surprised Edith how sad this made her. And there was Pluto, who Edith hadn't seen since she was a baby, who looked very much like her mother. A moment later, Hiram returned with a tray of tea and shortbread cookies. "Best when it's hot," he urged. And though it was just chilly enough outside to be tempting, Edith was neither hungry nor thirsty. She ought to have left already. Her eyes drifted across the maze of photos, landing on one of Pluto. Pluto's smile, it seemed, needed no prodding. "How old is she now?" 18 next month." There she'd gone again. For the first time, his gaze dropped, and Edith sensed his pain. She suspected he knew that Pluto was one of Eli's, and what's more, he knew her grim. He knew then what Pluto was. An anomaly, an outlier. It began with Hiram and Eli. At the start of their family tree, the brothers' branches spread. The family lines grew. Only recently did those lines cross. The result, Pluto. Her mother belonged to Hiram, her father to Eli, which made Pluto a descendant of them both. A first, for all Edith knew. Old Grandpa Eli had, unwittingly or not, cursed his niece. Suddenly pricked with sadness for this girl who wouldn't live past 18 and the 80-year-old who knew it, Edith attempted a hasty escape when one final frame caught her eye. At first glance, she thought it was a black-and-white photograph, but this was an ink drawing, a mother and son near a river. "That," Hiram said. "When I said I didn't know anything, I don't. There's no written record, but there are these." He opened the drawer of an oak end table and showed Edith a pile of drawings, some in ink, some in watercolor, all in varying degrees of completion and similar to the framed drawing on the wall. Done in brown ink on off-white woven paper, they had to be very old. Hiram insisted they all belonged to his great-great-grandfather. Edith took one carefully in hand, and it struck her painfully to see this mother clearly enamored by her boy, tossing rocks into the river together. These particular scenes were entitled simply, Sophie and Thomas. Edith strangely felt as if she'd seen them before. It was almost the exact perspective of her previous visit east, drawn as if from Eli's grave. "I think I've been to that river," she said. "Thomas, this Thomas, I believe, was buried beside it. He was only 9 when he passed." "I didn't know that," said Hiram. "That's very sad. Then again, death comes to us all." His mouth twitched, revealing a gentle, knowing smile, a reminder of their first meeting. Edith returned his smile. "Why Sophie and Thomas?" she asked. "Why those two and not any of the others?" "He was in love with her." "How do you know that?" "Because of this." Hiram flipped through the pile to show Edith another picture, this one a portrait in full watercolor. Edith's breath caught. "This is her? this is the woman Hiram loved? No one paints like that without feeling something for the subject. There are quite a few others, all her. But, Edith sifted through the pile, doesn't she look an awful lot like Sophie Devland? You must have known her. She was your daughter-in-law's backer or business partner. I'm not exactly sure what they were to each other. I never had much to do with the business side of things, Hiram said. Lavish parties are not for me. They never have been. Edith feathered her fingers across one woven page. Were they married? I'm guessing not. He found his wife out here after migrating west. She flipped through more of the stack, having to agree wholeheartedly with Hiram's assessment. The artist was in love with his subject. Was Thomas Hiram's child? Now, the older man said in a teasing, chiding tone, wouldn't Hiram have married her if he was? But how did the boy die? I couldn't tell you. Edith was no longer eager to leave the man, but desperate to get to work. She stood, thanked him, and regretted again at having dropped in on him unannounced. Please, Hiram said, you've made an old man's day. Stay a while. At least drink your tea. But she couldn't, because the woman in Hiram's sketches didn't only look like Sophie Devland. There was something else, something written about Phronsie in her brother's journal. She still has that limp. And the way Sophie would talk about it, as if it was part of her identity. Sometimes you hold on to things that remind you of heartache because it makes you stronger. Heartache, as in death of a son, as in love lost, as in she was at the beginning of it all with Grandpa Eli. On her way home, Edith placed a call to Sophie, who was out of state. She left a message with her housemaid. And later that day, in her bedroom, Edith hung one of Hiram's sketches, courtesy of his great-great-grandson, on the wall next to her ever-expanding family tree. As she stood back to look at it, she didn't see a Sophie in the picture. She saw herself. That night, Edith fell asleep over her laptop, thinking of her son.